what you say. I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
Now, baby, listen, baby, don't you treat me this away, 'cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do, 'cause it's understood. You ain't got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road.
Hello and welcome to The Charming Mistakes of My Youth on Kaechung 1630 AM in Los Angeles and kaechungradio.org worldwide.
Very impressive.
Thank you. I'm your host, Susanna Tontensop, and I'm here with...
You know what? Before we go any further, I'm so glad you said your last name because I've been trying to pronounce it for about, 10 years now?
Really?
Tontensop.
Yeah.
It's very simple. There's more letters and vowels than you would imagine to create the word Tontensop.
Right, it's not phonetically
right, correct.
Spelled,
but I'm so glad you pronounced it for me.
The YA is silent at the end. Great, and you have it now.
Yes.
So, as I said, I'm your host, Susanna Tontensop, and I'm here with my guest, Pete Weiss. He is a fixture in Los Angeles, done everything creatively possible in this city, and is still doing it today. He's LA's raconteur. He's been in bands and film, and has a really great podcast that's out.
Blow Mind Show with Keith Morris.
It's quite good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So you are very used to speaking on the radio.
Most definitely so.
Yes, and very entertaining. And the first song that we heard, Hit the Road Jack by Ray Charles, could you tell us why you chose that?
Well, you approached me originally and said, hey, I do this radio show, et cetera, et cetera, and I'm trying to get people to play songs from their early years into their teens. So, you know, I didn't want to go with, hey, let me curate a playlist that makes me sound like I was so hip and cool and I was like the most dialed in kid that ever lived and you should really think I'm so great because I have such great taste in music. And so you told me that you would rather that I'd have songs that had stories to them.
Mm-hmm.
And these I picked, granted, these are songs I probably don't listen to much anymore because I've probably heard them enough for a lifetime, most of them, but a lot of them like still touch me, but they all have a significance mm-hmm. in them. And I chose Hit the Road Jack because, you know, I grew up, I'm a little bit older than you, quite a bit older than you. I'm 58 years old now, so I was lucky enough to be, I'm kind of as old as rock and roll. Okay, I was born in 1959. That was the year that...
pretty much.
Yeah, that was the year that... Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and the pride of the San Fernando Valley, Richie Valens all died in the famous plane crash. In fact, on one of our podcast episodes, we go into how that was possibly a sacrificial rite in honor of Tuesday Weld's coronation as the Druid priestess. There's a lot of information that could possibly lead to that, but it's more than anything, it's entertaining. But that song, Hit the Road, Jack, the time that I grew up in was fraught. I mean, we think today is scary and what mm-hmm. and all that, but for myself, you know, I was, first thing I learned, you know, that song came out, I think, when I was probably about 6 years old, 1966. And first thing you learn as a Jew is that, you know, I was born, if you think how recently 15 years is from now, like, oh, my God, that's 2002.
Right.
That's 9/11.
Right.
Well, if you think when I was born, that 9/11 would have been the Holocaust.
Right. It was close to World War II.
It's very close to, I'm a child of a World War II veteran. My father was in the Coast Guard or whatever, because he's smart and he wouldn't get into the, you know.
Yeah.
He flew. So that song to me was frightening as all hell. It scared me to death. The whole give and take between Ray Charles and the Raylettes, how they'd answer him back and hit the road, Jack, is kind of a, it's a scary pronouncement. It's someone taking commanding an order to somebody, like, you are not wanted here. So as you know, my first memories are being told, like, okay, you're a Jew and you can get thrown in an oven at any time. The Cuban Missile Crisis had just happened, right? The Vietnam protests that weren't really happening at that point, but you could tell there was an undercurrent of something going on. And I grew up in the North Valley, you know, maybe, you know, 15 miles from where we are here now. And the Valley was a very peculiar place because it was pretty much almost rural in those days. There was nothing out there. I mean, there was nothing. And it was kind of spooky because the winds blow harder out there and it's dark, but it's not country. So there was this void. There was this spiritual void out there that I was thrown into with not a lot of guidance on how to deal with it. And for whatever reason, I believe that, you know, there's certain things I'm good at and certain things I'm not good at, but I believe that been borne out over the years that I've got a pretty big brain.
Right.
Now, it's not good for remembering things. It's not good for going to school. It's not good for succeeding financially in life. There's a lot of things, you know, that it's not good for.
Right.
But being perceptive to undercurrents and emotions and all that, it's really good at. So I was spinning out of control inside my head at this time, you know, because there was no structure. The country was kind of thrown into all these World War II guys. They didn't know how to run families. They were teenagers, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're at war, and then they come back and they're putting these, you know, suburban lives together, and they didn't even know what the fuck that was. So here I am. Am I allowed to cuss?
Yes. K-Chung. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I get you. Well, if it's over broadcast, but it's probably illegal. Anyway, so that song specifically really scared the hell out of me. There was a Disney program. I can't remember, because the big thing in those days was on Sundays at, I think, 6:30 would be the Wonderful World of Disney. And there's that one with the Headless Horseman, Sleepy Hollow, maybe. And there was, like, one image from that that's still stuck in my mind of a Headless Horseman and Hit the Road, Jack. And, you know, I was frightened to my core by that song. And I remember my friend, I would not be able to remember the kid's name. I know that he lived on the next block at the end of the block. I would never be able to remember his name. I can't remember anything. In fact, before my father died, me and my brother took my father to drive around the old neighborhood where we grew up in. I haven't been back there in ages. But my brother knew the names of who lived in every house, everybody's name. And it's just a blank. My whole childhood is a complete blank to me. I have no memory. That's one of the things that my brain's not good at is...
But you have these moments.
I have these snapshots. And the kid had one of those speak and say 45 turntables. Or they used to have these little plastic kids' turntables in the day. And he kept on playing that song over and over. And it just, you know, it bugged me out to no end. So that song really affected, and it still affects me today when I hear that song. It just spooks me. And I don't know if that's a unique perception of that tune.
I've never heard that perception of that song.
But it's really
interesting. It frightens take on it.
A lot of the music I'm going to play is it's basically a kind of a window into the darkness of my soul, because these were the songs that really affected me. And, you know, like you could talk about Pop Pam. Oh, do I want to hold your hand? And they wanted. That's not the stuff that got to me. So.
Right.
A lot of these things that we might discuss today will have a kind of a dark edge to them.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. And I want to note what's interesting is the show that we had last month, the first song was Buddy Holly, and it had to do with the guests being taken to see there was a musical, The Day the Music Died.
I'm sure there was.
And that was imprinted in his memory.
Right.
So we're kind of starting off on the same note, so to speak.
Yes.
And Let's set up the next song that you've chosen.
The next song that I've chosen, I have to look, but I'm sure it is. Oh. The next song, we just mentioned the Beatles.
Yes.
Well, this is a Beatles song, and it's from 1966, and it's off the Revolver record. And it's called Tomorrow Never Knows. And the specific, like, I was a very uneasy child. I would be the kid that would be going over to someone's house for dinner,
mm-hmm.
and I'd be the one that would stop outside the door and break down. Because I was just so uncomfortable with everything to do with life. So this particular, we're going to someone's house for a Jewish holiday. I believe it was Yom Kippur or something like that, like breaking the fast on Yom Kippur. We're going to somebody's house. And Revolver had just come out, and they're playing Revolver. The song's Tomorrow Never Knows by the Beatles. There was a bunch of them on there that I could have chosen. And the confluence of The Bad Seed, the movie The Bad Seed, playing on the television.
Scary movie.
Tomorrow Never Knows playing in the environment at the same time. Another reason that my fear level
right.
went through the ceiling. I mean, it's just these, that profound thing when you're really unable to deal with. You know, I think about the kids today and the music that they're mm-hmm. exposed to. And they have Radio Disney, and then they have Katy Perry, and they have
right.
all these yip, beep, 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 beep. Well, if you think back in the 60s, there was one music for everybody. There were AM radio stations that played the popular
right.
music, and that was how you got exposed to music. There was no FM radio. There was no alternative way to get music. It was just AM radio. So if you think that the adults, the teenagers, basically the teenagers and the young adults and the children
all
heard the
same
thing. And then you try to think of a young mind that's overactive and has all this darkness hovering above it. You know, drop and roll at school,
right.
this, that, and the Cuban Missile Crisis had just happened. The president had been assassinated. We're going to a war. I mean, it's hectic as fuck. And you're trying to, a seven-year-old child, is trying to process Tomorrow Never Knows.
Lay down for surrender. that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one.
And we're back.
Yes, we are. Are you? And there's a number that you can go. It's very easily available on the web. It's called the Suicide Prevention Hotline. So if you've heard those tracks and you're getting some dark ideas, there's someone to talk to you close at hand. Just pick up the phone. There's no reason to be alone tonight. Right?
Exactly.
Because it's going to get a little bit darker, ladies and gentlemen. I got to tell you. Because, you know. But I'm a mirthful, happy guy, I gotta tell you. Okay, we gotta keep this thing rolling. Susanna says we gotta keep it going.
Yeah, we're on a time crunch.
We just heard Tomorrow Never Knows by The Beatle off the Revolver record. And the next track was One is the Loneliest Number by Three Dog Night. I believe that was, I don't know who that was written by. Is it Randy Newman or Laura Nero? Maybe Laura Nero? I don't know. But do you want me to spiel on that for a second?
Yeah.
Well, so here you go again, like... How that's a pop song. Mm-hmm. One is the Loneliest Number is a pop song.
It's a very
so,
sad song.
It's a horrible song, but that's how I've... That's like... That was my cue to me towards romance. I didn't go for the, like, you know... All the songs I identified with were ones about broken romance and sadness and dejection. And it's going to... You know, we're going to get into it a little bit deeper, but... But that's a beautiful song. I mean, I was going to go with another song that really affected me was Harry Nilsson. I can't live it without you.
No
one can forget the feeling. Like, just the sad, I gravitated towards the sad ones.
Yeah.
Always, because I was a miserable person. I was a miserable, horrible child. I found no relief in anything except for running wild playing sports because then my brain would shut off.
What sports did you play?
I played all of them. You know, the highlight of my entire life. We're not talking about like sleeping with women and playing in front of 70,000 people in the rock thing or being in movies or writing books or having a podcast. Pop Warner football when I was, you know, 12 and 13 years old was the greatest experience of my life. There was something so liberating about having a shell, an artificial shell on myself, and being able to inject myself physically into any situation without fear of too much harm. It was really, that was a really great thing for me. But, you know, that's at the same point, like before a game, I'd be ready to shit in my pants or throw up because I was so scared of the potential for violence. Once I got in there,
you were fine.
I was out of my mind. I couldn't be touched.
So it was the anticipation that
it's the same thing. Like with when I play music, is like before I'd never go into a show and watch the drummer that was in the band before me because he'd invariably be better than me. But when we got on stage and after the first note, I would fuck up anybody within 100 miles, and it'd be the, you know.
Yeah.
I would take no fucking prisoners. I would just leave, you know, I would go mad and create. You know, I can create in the moment better than I can conceive of creation. Like the same thing with broads. Like, I'm not good at like, hey, that's a girl that I'd like to go out with. But you throw me into the situation and you take away all the preamble of thought, then I have not a problem in the world. I'm a wonderful human being. But getting to that point
is very hard.
Right, because, you know, whatever. Like, I'm probably got my...
Or you're in your head.
Well, I probably got, like, you know, my tone, my left pinky toenail in the spectrum. As I look back on the way my life's played out, there's probably... I mean, it's normal, because everyone's kind of... But I've got that kind of social... whatever, there's something jacked up in my normal... compared to what we presume as normalcy or society.
But also what I'm hearing from you is because of the time that you grew up in, it was an extraordinary historical time with a lot of anxiety throughout the country, and that has to play into it.
On the little kids' heads.
Yeah.
You know, and especially with setup where I was. And, you know,
you have to look at the whole context.
It's always a mixture
of causes and conditions of how it's always like
DNA versus environment, and that's where you're going to get, you know, whatever your character is or your spiritual, if there is such a thing.
So why don't we set up the next song? What do we have on the docket?
The next song is, okay, here's another one that's jacked up. Here's the story behind this one is like, so okay, you know, North Valley, it's October, and it's another one around a Jewish holiday because I really liked the Jewish holidays. They were scarier than anything because you'd go into these things with all these people and they'd sing in a language you didn't understand. But the melodies that they were singing were foreboding, especially in like Yom Kippur, the high holidays were like, so this specific image, this was on the pop radio, I'm walking, it's 105 degrees. I'm walking on Devonshire Street in North Valley by myself. I'm 7 years old. I'm walking from our house about a half a mile to where my parents are at the temple because you could do shit like that in those days.
Right.
If there's a Santa Ana wind blowing, which is really part of my DNA, Raymond Chandler, Nuad, right? And the song, I'm singing the song to myself, and it's a song by The Doors called People Are Strange,
which
is one of the fucking...
How old were you when that...
That's 7 years old. That's 7 years old. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces seem ugly when you're... Oh, thank you for planting that thought in my head. Right? So all of a sudden, you get this...
That's crazy.
You get, you know, you wonder why people turned into punk rockers. Because it's a lot of people that were subjected to these same influences in their early childhood. And at that certain point, those seeds were planted in their brains.
Yeah.
And that's where this... Because 60s... Distrust of all authority. You never gave your phone number, your name. You distrusted because they knew this, the kids back then had been educated to know that they could throw you in camps if they had your information, if you knew about them. So the song we're going to listen to now is The Doors. I'm sorry that you have to listen to some Doors for all you people who are anti, but maybe if you have a little historical perspective like I do of it, you might be more opening to listening to it. People Are Strange by The Doors.
Bink. Bam.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked
when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
Just one more morning, I had to wake up with the blues, yeah. Pull myself out of bed, put on my walking shoes, and I went up on the mountain to see what I could see. Oh,
So that, ladies and gentlemen, was the Allman Brothers.
The last two, yeah. It was the Doors and then into the Allman Brothers. And so what we're
Dreams.
Doing, Dreams by the Allman Brothers. So that Allman Brothers would have been what I was into, say, when I starting about 12 years old when I discovered FM radio.
Right.
And I had an older brother that
So when did FM radio come out?
I think it was about, I got hip to it probably in about 70, 71. I remember being sick from school one day and I turned on KMET in town. And all of a sudden they're playing these long, you know, long songs and it's this FM radio type thing.
Why?
It had to do with FCC and bandwidth. I'm sure
okay.
It might have existed beforehand, but the popularity of it didn't really get going until like, or...
Because it pretty much eclipses AM radio now.
Oh, of course. But the point being is that the average Joe, you know, a corn dog, as the Minutemen would say, out in the North Valley, wouldn't know that there's FM. How would you even know there's FM radio when all you know is transistor radios?
Right.
You know, that was, you know, I almost did Lay Lady Lay, but because that was my burgeoning sexuality when I realized I saw Tammy Ross's jugs between whatever, you know, sixth and seventh grade at the pool, and the Lay Lady Lay was on the, you know, at the Cal State Northridge pool where we used to go hang out, and it's like, whoa, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So, but the Allman Brothers were a link to my maturing tastes in music.
Mm.
You know, that's when you know, everyone's like, what did you do before punk rock? And everyone, when punk rock happened, everyone kind of...
Well, Allman Brothers are great.
Allman Brothers, people that today don't realize how big the Allman Brothers were. They were like, they were like Beyonce.
They're still big in the South.
Oh, yeah.
It gets played,
you know,
all the time.
R.I.P. Greg Allman. But anyways, so the Allman Brothers were a huge, huge thing. And that got me more into... longer based music, and it opened my, you know, there was a bunch of other things, like the next track I'm going to play is basically an extension of that, as well as like my tastes at like, you know, 12 years old, whatever, 1971, 72.
It's funny, I was listening to Allman Brothers when I was about 12 years old.
And like a lot of kids in the neighborhood were a little bit hipper to like, you know, the Faces and stuff like that, but, you know, I was really kind of like on an island out there, like, you know, in my mind, especially because I was such a, you know, bound up little kid. I didn't go seeking out that much adventure, really.
And how many siblings do you have?
I had two older sisters. I have one older sister now, and I have an older brother.
So you're the youngest.
I'm the youngest.
So you are the youngest in your school and the youngest in family.
Yeah, and the biggest problem for everybody, because But that's why, like I'm saying, when punk rock came out, throw into that one in my teen years, you know, starting in ninth grade when they went around the gym class because they were really good at sports, and they asked everyone to touch their toes, and your gym teacher came and would trace your spine to look for scoliosis, and then like, oh, pulled me right out of the fucking line and put me in what's called a Milwaukee brace, which was a metal contraption, basically like, a post
for
that holds...
long?
God, 3-4 years, something like that. So
you
I
had
was,
to wear it every day.
Oh yeah,
all through school.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's a very traumatizing.
It is and it isn't, because it really got me ready to not give a fuck.
Right.
Because people would look at me like I was diseased and there was something wrong with me and I was a freak. When in actuality, I was just growing crooked, and it's just basically like a cast for your arm. But so, like, when all this punk rock shit happened or whatever, I was already... I never dressed punk rock, mind you. That was never my... never a trend follower.
Have
like
you
that.
Always dressed kind of the same way?
No, when I was a young man, I could peacock out, like, the best of them, because that's what you're supposed to do when you're a young man. You peacock out and attract the ladies, especially when it was apropos to my career.
Uh-huh.
Like I was, you know, a junkie rock musician for ages, so I could get away with it because I actually deserved it.
Right.
I wasn't like these people now that are walking around in clothes that make them look like they're dangerous and they got tattoos, they're ripped clothes. No, we had ripped clothes because we didn't have any fucking money. We didn't have any jobs and we were shooting dope and playing music all night and traveling the world and living like, you know, pirates.
Yeah.
You know, for real.
Yeah.
And not as a pose.
Style.
It was not a pose. There was no other place in society for us.
Right.
You know, that's where it really got down to. It was back in the days when there was no money in music. So if you were going to play music, you were really...
Well, there's no money in music anymore either.
Well, yeah.
It's going back down.
So.
Or it's been down.
So I'm supposed to... You're supposed to go like this and pick a Proust post, and I'm supposed to like comment on it, right? These are ones that I found somewhat relevant to my existence. Okay, the one that you picked is, a writer's work like the water in an artesian well, mount to a height which is in proportion to the depth to which suffering has penetrated his soul. I agree so much. That is, see, I knew
you picked. Where did you find that from?
I went to a Goodreads, and they had like a 5,000 quotes, and I just started pulling ones that
responded to you.
That, you know, I'm with it. It's probably not my favorite stuff of all time, but that, you know, that's just common sense to me.
Right.
It's like, it's basically the songs that we've been listening to.
Right.
There's a thread through all of it that you could probably just link back.
Well, and that's the whole thing about the show is it's very Proustian and how songs bring back the nostalgia and that euphoric recall and really put an imprint.
I don't know about euphoric, but recall, yeah.
Recall and really put an imprint on our lives through our childhood and adolescence. Those are the songs.
Right.
That's
what I try to do is be faithful to the fact
core.
Of songs that really...
Right.
That affected
you, and also it's not necessarily that you chose those songs. Those songs came into your life because you're still forming.
If we really wanted to get on a tangent, we could go into the whole thing about like you have no choice because you don't decide that you like chocolate.
Yeah,
you either like chocolate. You don't decide that you're gay or straight. You just are. You don't decide that a song is gonna. It's a combination of DNA and environment that's gonna bring you to making these decisions, and it's nothing you can do. Really, I mean, you could think you're having we won't go into the twin studies and all that stuff, but at this point in time, I would have diverged into the twin studies. Okay.
And I also want to say I sometimes like chocolate and sometimes I don't.
What is that about? So the next song we're about to listen to is a song by Little Feet,
okay,
a band out of Los Angeles called It's So Easy to Slip. So right now, what I was going through like on a musical evolution is, you know, in my early teens... I was not listening to what's consumed like popular music, but this is an artist, Lowell George, another, you know, died shooting coke in a bathtub or whatever.
Oh.
And so it's another song that's rueful and melodic. So we're going to listen to It's So Easy to Slip by the band Little Feet.
Great.
Yeah.
So we just heard, we just came out of back in New York City by the band Genesis. That was a Peter Gabriel's swan song with the band. And before that was Little Feet's It's So Easy to Slip. If you notice, there's a little thematic in the It's So Easy to Slip, It's So Easy to Fall, It's So Easy to Slip, and
exactly.
to those nothing yeah. at all, you know, all the friends that you lost, all the people that you can't recall, did they really exist at all? So there you go. There's some
very
more.
Very philosophical.
Very philosophical. And the reason I played this Genesis track, because they were, I still to this day love the Peter Gabriel era Genesis. I mean,
well,
I think.
He was fantastic.
You know what? Lucky for me, I saw his very first solo gigs at the Roxy Theater here in town.
Oh, amazing.
Off his first record. And another story, I was in the record shop before his first solo record came out. Mm-hmm. Like, cause I'd smoke, the valley has nothing to do, so you smoke some weed, it's raining. I remember I was in, like, I think Slip Disc or somewhere out in the Central Valley or whatever. I'm probably like, you know, 16, 15. And I hear this music come over the stereo, no one's heard it yet. And I'm going like, that's the new Peter Gabriel record, even though it didn't sound anything like Genesis.
Right.
You know, and cut to about a month later, I'm at the Roxy and the band's Robert Fripp, Bill Bruford, Larry Fast, and Tony Levin. And I'm like second row, seeing Peter Gabriel do his, you know, his first shows as a solo artist. And I went two nights, of course, because that was what you did in those days. Like, you drive all the way. We drive from the North Valley to the Fox Venice to see a movie. We drive from the North Valley to the Newark to see a movie, to the Vagabond.
It's probably much easier to get around, too.
Well, not really, because like, we had nothing to do. There was nothing to do in the North Valley. So to spend, you know, 2.5 hours or 2 hours driving, smoke a joint or whatever, and drive 2 hours was not a big deal because there was nothing there to stick around for. There was nothing. There was no entertainment. There was nothing
just
out there.
Suburbia.
Just the worst of it. And that, you know, I've done a bunch of projects with my friend, you know, Dan Monick. I've done a bunch of projects with him about this valley experience where you have this city.
Did he grow up in the valley?
No, he grew up in Minneapolis, but he's obsessed with the valley. And a lot of it, my experience, I wrote a screenplay for him about it. Anyways, point being is that you had this ball of energy of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And like during the Watts riots, I remember seeing the smoke rising over the hills, you know, into the valley. You could see the fire and like be wondering what the hell's going on in that city. But you're still divorced from it and far away and separate. Where
it
like
still feels far away and separate to me.
Right. And then I think a lot of my friends that grew up on the West Side or grew up in the city or like, you know, a lot of the guys went to Fairfax that I hang out with. And like, you know, they have this richer childhood experience. And almost even a better way of dealing with life.
A more urban experience,
right,
too.
Where I was like, I was this fucked up brain by myself with nothing, with no one really to share that
so
with
me. So your siblings weren't.
It wasn't until punk rock that I was going to Pierce. I got kicked out of high school when I was 16 because I didn't go. And I went to Pierce College in the Valley. And all of a sudden, that's, you know, like 1970. 677, and there was four or five of us on campus that were starting to get hip to punk rock, and then we found each other. I was like on the radio station there or whatever, and then we started traveling into the city to see music together.
So that's when it clicked for you.
That's when I started growing up as a human being. I mean, I took myself.
You felt not so
yeah,
alone.
I took myself from the North Valley to go see. Like, I went to see Elvis Costello's very first show at the Whiskey A Go-Go because I'd read something about it, and his record hadn't even come. I think it was the week his record came out. The biggest thing, actually, that ever happened to me was that Rodney on the Rock came on the air in 1976 on K-Rock. And I heard Patti Smith on Rodney on the Rock, and she said, fuck on the radio, and was talking about shit. And I was like, oh, my God. That's I get it. And I sought out that
world.
Lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Genesis was a big bridge to me between what I'd been listening to and growing up on and then where my tastes would eventually lead me. So I wasn't one of those guys that got into Genesis and then got into like Gentle Giant and all. I went deep prog and all that stuff or whatever. You know, I saw Yes, you know, in 72 at the Forum because that's what you did in those days. It was badass. And I, you know, still dig it today. But, and the next song that we're going to get into is very interesting because it's off Lou Reed's Rock and Roll Animal record.
Ah.
I think I'm playing the song Rock and Roll, which is, we can cut out.
Is this the last song?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
We're at the end.
So, yeah, we're at the end. So the point being is that, the reason I chose Rock and Roll Animal by Lou Reed is that from where I came from, we had never heard of the Velvet Underground.
Right.
Never heard of the Velvet Underground. So on FM radio, though, Lou Reed released this kind of like stadium rock record, which I thought was what Lou Reed did. He made stadium rock. So I heard this album, Rock and Roll Animal, with its, you know, guitar solos and its, you know, bombast and whatever. And I thought to myself, wow, it's great. This is fantastic. I bought the record. And then I started looking at his other records. And through those records, I got to Eno. And I got through John Cale.
Yeah.
And I got through the Velvet Underground. In fact, I went to one of those record stores I was talking about earlier, and I bought a promo copy of the Banana Peel record.
Mm.
Promo copy, pristine, unpeeled banana for $5.
You still have it?
I actually sold the vinyl. When I was a junkie, I sold the vinyl for $100, and the guy gave me a first edition vinyl, but he just wanted the promo vinyl.
Yeah.
Mike Vague, you know, took advantage of me. But, like, I wouldn't sell it anyways. But, yeah, I still have that original vinyl. But so that was my link. That was, you know, in 1972, 73, that was my link to what I would follow. And then I hear a lot of people younger than me, you know, like say they're in their like early 40s, whatever. Oh, LA punk rock band is so terrible. Dead. So much of music and art is you have to place in its
context.
In its time and its historical context, and to find the real meaning in it.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, I heard the, you know, when on Rodney on the Rock, I have this cassette, I made a cassette tape, because that was what you would do. You would tape Rodney on the Rock. In fact, I was I had a punk rock radio show in 1978 at Pierce College, and I would tape Rodney on the Rock because I couldn't afford to buy records. I was always been poor, and I would play songs like White Man and Hammersmith Pelle. I'd pull it right off of my cassette tape. And I have a cassette tape where he's playing, you know, The Weirdos, he's playing like Generation X for the first time, like all this stuff, like one song after another that we know as classics all came out at the exact same time. But you hear Forming by the Germs, it's like their first single. Nothing has or will ever sound as wrong and right at the same time as that primal, that's my primal vibe, you know.
Well, Pete, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, this was The Charming Mistakes of My Youth on 1630 AM in Los Angeles and kchungradio.org worldwide. Stay tuned next month. Our show is on every third Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you very much.
And, oh, no sweat, man.
Let's close it out with Lou Reed.
Oh, hell yeah. We'll be right back.
Thank you.